Hey there, ho there, yo there. You're listening to Super Tool Shed, the only podcast on the internet where the hosts are playing Taint Tug of War, and I'm winning. I'm your host, Mark the Engineer. With me is Bennett the Sage, and today we are talking about DC. Not Washington, DC. Not DC Douglas, but the DC Universe. Why? Injustice, and Justice League, and everything in between, even though there's not all that much. But before we get through all that, the pleasantries, because we have to do them. So, Bennett, how was your week?
I gotta say, you're not selling me on the enthusiasm.
Yeah, well, guess what? Fuck off!
Ha! Oh, man. Well, my weeks have been actually fairly nice. This is going to be an exclusive for all of you loyal Super Tool Shed listeners. I just banged out 3 scripts for the month of May's Anime Abandoned, because it's Women's Month here on Anime Abandoned.
And for those of you that are holding your breath like, oh, did Bennett knock the bottom out? No. Doesn't get fangirls. That's what the Twitter says. Doesn't get fangirls.
And people think I'm making this up. Go figure. Oh, man. Since I let loose what's going to happen in May on the last Anime Abandoned, which, by the way, is one of my favorite episodes I've done in the last, I'd say, 20 episodes. I mean, I love all my episodes like they're my children, but...
I can't choose between my children. Just choose a favorite.
I'll say Take Please is definitely in my top 5 I've ever done.
All right, now tell them the truth. Tell them exactly how long you've loved Tank Police.
I've loved Tank Police since I first saw it a few months ago.
It wasn't even that long.
I saw Tank Police.
March!
Yeah, I first saw Tank Police in March. Like I said, I didn't have sci-fi growing up.
Well, I'm not attacking you. I'm just saying it's for the sake of being transparent. Benny had never seen Tank Police, and when he saw it, it was like a kid getting an N64 on Christmas, and there actually being an N64 in the box.
Instead of clothes. You saw that video, right? Where somebody stuffed some clothes in an Xbox 360 box and just gave it to their kid at Christmas?
You just gotta wonder what server on YouTube that's still sitting on. It's probably got, like cobwebs on it, and it's sitting in the basement. Like, beware of Panther near there.
Yeah. Oh god! It still has like a 4.5-star rating on its video player. They didn't even bother updating the system for it. It's like, nah, just go with the star system.
Like, this is where we keep all the old stuff, the real player stuff.
In any case, when I first saw Tank Police, I think I watched it with you. Like, you gave me a ripped copy of it. You ripped the cop, your version of it, and you sent it to me.
For the record, it was because we were under a time limit, and it was in the mail, and that one thing that we had said, like, oh shit, we can't do this one episode because it'll make people angry. Not you people, just people we know. We had to think real fast. You're like, shit, what do we do? Tank Police, have you ever seen Tank Police? No. Good. Here.
So he burns his copy of Tank Police, he sends it to me, and I think I wasn't on the phone with him while I was watching it, but I was just texting him as I was watching. He's like, dude, this is badass. And then the second half starts, and I was like, wow, this really is a Masamune anime, isn't it?
And that's where we got into the whole, so the line should be, Dominion Tank Police got all Masamune on us.
Oh, God. Talk about jokes that we missed. I just tweeted this a few hours ago, and you brought it up to me, and then you brought up the urine plot point. And what we should have done was make that reference to that, you know, urine is sterile, right? You can drink it. Line from that fake PSA that they had Brad Pitt do for the Fight Club.
Yeah, in theaters and on the special edition DVD. Yeah. And I was so pissed. So angry about that, and now I'm sure that you'll all be, well, you really won't care, because the funny thing is that now that we did Tank Police, everybody's like, you want to do new Dominion Tank Police? And it's like, I haven't even seen that. I don't know if it's good, bad, or insane.
I've heard, you know, us mostly on the insane good part. I mean, it's not, I think there's probably, knowing Masamune, there probably is going to be like this out of this left turn into, navel-gazing, pretentiousville.
Which, you know what? I don't care. So long as there's a teeny-weeny tank, a tiny tank, if you will, twanky-wanky, tinky-tinky, figure out that game. telling you, man, more people needed to play Tiny Tank. But so long as there's a, you know, a really sparky redhead and a tiny tank and Shithouse the Second, I'm good.
Yeah. You really latched onto that nickname, didn't you?
I did, because I didn't realize until, you know, I'd gone back and watched it again. It's like, oh shit, that looks like the dude from Mad Bull 34.
And he's an asshole cop too.
It's perfect. It's Shithouse the Second. It's Shithouse in the future.
And you know it's the future because he has those douche sunglasses on.
Yeah, he has like the mono sunglass, that weird visor thing.
Like, that doesn't even look like it has, like, frames on it. It's just a black visor over his eyes.
Yeah, and you give Gunner enough time and they're going to make those glasses. You just watch. Now, available through Adam Sessler's website, the new Gunner monocle visor thing. It protects your eyes from UV rays and keeps you from going blind. Well, is that keeps me from going blind from playing video games too much in the dark or from jerking it? Both.
Jordy LaForge wishes he had it this good.
Yeah, that's what they'll call it. They'll call it the Gunner LaForge. Oh man, that works for me. But yeah, so now that Dominion Tank Police is out, and this is really the first time that we've recorded a podcast on the heels of an episode coming out, because the scheme is, kids, is that we're trying to do this podcast so that there's something in between the time that there is an anime abandoned. And right now, since most of you are clearly very not interested in Bennett's game reviews, because really, why would you be? I'm trying to discourage him from doing them ever again, so that way we can all focus on what's important, which is making jokes about Valkyrie bitches.
Exactly. Oh, man. And I will say that I was expecting like no one to understand what the hell Virgin Fleet was when I did the lead-in, but there's this one guy who left a comment about like, oh, Virgin Fleet, top 10 weirdest plots I've ever heard of, right there. And I don't want to go into Virgin Fleet right now until the episode about it is released. It's already written, by the way.
But again, tell the truth.
I just saw Virgin. All right, this motherfucker has been getting me to do Virgin Fleet for like half a year now, right? About half a year?
Yeah, because the story is, it was, okay, have you ever seen the Sonic OVA? No. All right, I'm going to go out and try and find it. I don't find that, but I managed to find Gulf Force Eternal Story, and strapped to its back is this free copy of Virgin Fleet. Like, get Gulf Force, get this really shitty anime free. And I said, all right, well, it's free. How bad could it be? Six-pack of beer, nice pizza from South Philly. Let's fucking throw this baby in, see how bad it is. Oh, it's bad. I'm going to need more booze.
I'll need stronger booze.
It's like, no, because I can't, because I have to suffer through the whole thing, so I can't like drink until I pass out. And drinking until I pass out would be like, all right, let's just whip out the hard stuff. No, it's just got to be a slow burn. So by the end of it, it's not incomprehensible because I'm drunk, it's incomprehensible because it's incomprehensible.
The problem with the anime is that it has a weirdly really stupid plot and a really stupid setup, but unlike every other anime that had those kind of weird and stupid plots, it's not a joke. Like, they were completely, totally serious and earnest about it.
Yeah,
like, wow, you really believed in this, didn't you?
It's that moment in Bioshock. Your entire life you were talking about killing puppies. Oh, I'm so angry, I'm going to kill a puppy. And then it's, would you kindly kill the puppy? Ah, shit. It's not funny now.
So, I guess people who looked at Virgin Fleet and said, what the fuck is that? And just decided to look it up. They'll be surprised to find out that Virgin Fleet doesn't even have a Wikipedia article.
Yeah, because it's going away. Like, eventually it's just going to go away. That meow you just heard was my cat Miles, who really wants my attention. Fuck you, Oreo. Yeah, it's, I don't know, we're pulling from the bottom of the bottom of the barrel, and we can't, I wish we could just come out and say everything that's going to happen in the second, third, and fourth quarter, but we just fucking can't. But I'm telling you, we are not just digging the bottom of the barrel. We're not scraping the bottle of the bottom of the barrel, and we're most certainly not drilling through the bottom of the barrel. We're in China, all right? We are in China, and the shit that's in the bargain bin in China is where we're digging.
And the weirdest part about watching Virgin Fleet was the fact that they tried to advertise it as from the creator of Sakura Wars.
Yeah, which is a nice badge of quality there. Like, hey, from the creator of Sakura Taisen. It's like, you have any idea how much I don't care about that? Really?
I mean, of all the franchises that I've never known anyone to actually really like, and yet it still is somehow everywhere.
It's Sakura Wars. Yeah, Sakura Wars and fucking Agorist War. Like, it just will not fucking stop. It's just like, let's just keep printing coasters. Why not?
I was like, I don't know anyone who's ever played a Sakura Wars game or even owned any of the anime. I mean, I've seen people with the Lodoss War DVD before I've seen anyone with a Sakura War DVD.
Yeah, and I guess at this point we can just flat out say it's like we're not doing fucking Lotus War this year. It just it was in the plan, but it just can't happen. The schedule is officially too full. We had this whole two quarters of nothing. That was the plan. Just leave it just blank. And here's what happened. Cause we got Lisa Ortiz, who's fantastic. And she happily showed up, and it was like, oh yeah, you know, like, let's talk about that. But it just never happened. And then what happened after that was you, the audience, kept suggesting really good shit. So if you want any ideas to what's going to happen for the next few months, go back through all the comments and look at all the stuff that people are suggesting. We're cherry picking from the comments. Not even kidding. We have you to thank for actually a really good lineup this year, with very few dead spaces where we're just like, we still don't know what we're going to do this month.
Because the way that Anime Abandon is produced is I write the episodes the month before they appear online. Like, I had the Dominion Tank Police script written, like, since March 28th. And I had shot it the beginning of the month. So the scripts are written a month in advance, and the episodes are shot about the beginning of the month before, you know, the 14th, when the first episode is supposed to premiere of the month. The first episode of the month is set to premiere.
So now we're just like, it's unfortunately, but I mean, it gives us a really nice look for 2014. Like, expect at some point, if we throw the dart, you know, Lotus War, maybe next year. But you guys are killing us with all these really good suggestions. I'm not kidding. You guys just have a well so deep, and you just keep pulling. Like, I remember this ruined my childhood and this and this.
And like, you know what anime that just appeared briefly and I really love, but like it's fallen by the wayside? This. And like, yeah, I remember that too. Why doesn't anybody talk about this? Let's find out.
Because I think somebody suggested Irresponsible Captain Tyler, and I was just like,
yeah, I got a few responses from that, a few requests for Irresponsible Captain Tyler.
Yeah, and I'm just like, why don't we do Tyler? and the best, I think the best suggestion of the year, like, so far, was somebody said, I'll give you a donation if you do Gunsmith Cats. And here's the thing about Gunsmith Cats. We're going to do Gunsmith Cats eventually. But we got to give Brett some time to stop hating us for a while. Because we just can't do Gunsmith Cats without Brett. And here's our last little bit of story time before we get into the main topic of the show. When we were ramping up to do Macross, I had gone to Brett and I was just shooting the shit with him. And I said, yeah, Bennett's going to do Macross Plus. It's going to be really fucking awesome. And Brett, like a champ, goes, oh, what's Bennett just going through my IMDb page looking for shit to put me in now? And I was like, motherfucker, if we're going to get Roy Fokker, we're going to get the real Roy Fokker. And that's where the Dan Warren joke came from in the 50th episode. And he just kind of went, ow, my pride. But, you know, it's like, happy to have Brett in whatever form that he'll show up on the show. But it's like, well, dude, we're not going to parade you around. It's like, look, it's ADV's Roy Falker. It's, you know, it's not gonna work. It's like, here's Ocean's Goku. Like, nobody cares, dude.
Wait, he was Goku for a bit?
I forgot
about that.
No, he's not. See?
Like, Ocean's Goku. Wait a minute. Ocean's Goku. That wasn't like,
that would involve Brett being in Canada. No. There were, like, four Ocean Gokus.
that's what threw me for a loop. It's like, I know there were many Gokus. He was for Goku.
But Brett was one of the original Ryus. So, there is that. We always have that to make fun of him for. Like, he was one of the original Ryus. And, once upon a time, he was the original, I can't remember what the dude's name is from Gurren Lagann. The dude with the stupid glasses.
There's many stupid glasses. But...
The dude with the stupid pointy glasses.
Kamina?
Yeah, he was the original Kamina. But yeah, we can't do Gunsmith Cats without getting Brett, so we'll do it. We just gotta wait for Brett to get his head out from under his ass. Love you, Brett.
Love you too. I've been waiting to talk about this game for a long, long time. I don't think I've ever had as much fun with this game, at least for a fighting game, certainly, since... No, fuck Mortal Kombat. I don't think I've ever had as much fun with a fighting game as I had with Injustice.
And I'll agree. I mean, it's still, you know, Mortal Kombat from front to back. They don't do motion-based commands. They're just like, just press each button individually and you'll do the move. And I'm like, God, this is so... Like, next you're just going to tell me to bang two sticks together. What the fuck? But even at that, yeah, I was genuinely surprised. I was like, well, it's based on an okay fighting system, but let's just jump in. It's Injustice by NetherRealm Studios. Sip of the coffee. Victory sip.
Yeah, victories.
But we were, I think that we were both pleasantly surprised because Bennett's not a fighting guy. And it's just kind of insane that he you got into this game so fucking deep. And I was just like, well, I just want the campaign.
Well, I wanted to play the game for, I like the Mortal Kombat system because I like a fighting game that doesn't have to revolve around the exact same kind of play style, as it were. I like in an entire genre that's trying to dethrone one fighting series. And let's face it, every 2D fighting game is going after Street Fighter. There is a fighting game that says, we don't need to do that. We can do things our own way.
And that's because they're a legacy franchise at this point. They don't have to compete with anybody. They don't have to do anything. They just... have to put Mortal Kombat on the box and guys our age and a little bit older go, yes. You know, like it's, yeah. Except I think that everybody's kind of on the same page at this point that we'd really like another Shaolin Monks because it kind of wasn't expected and it was one of the best games ever made. But yeah, NetherRealm doesn't have to do shit, especially now that they're, you know, Warner Brothers property.
And they're making some really good games.
Yeah, one game every couple of years.
One game every couple of years. I mean, Mortal Kombat came out in 2011, Injustice in 2013. It's, you know, 2 years to make a decent game.
On an engine that already exists. Yeah, that's not a bad stroke, I would say.
No, let's be fair. They're better than decent.
They're better than decent. Their ability to tell stories has definitely gotten a whole shit ton better. Although honestly, I would argue that they've never told a bad story. They have told stories that I really couldn't give two shits about. Like Armageddon just fucking sucked. But I jumped off with a whole lot of people at the same time when it was like, what do you mean you killed Liu Kang? What do you mean you sucker punt that a million dudes come to kill Liu Kang? Dude is the Iron fucking Dragon, and then this Quan Chi fuck comes out, sucker punches him, and is like, yep, you're dead.
Wait a minute, that's Deadly Alliance. That's not Armageddon.
No, I'm just saying that's when I got off. I left at Deadly Alliance, where it's like, no,
It's like, no. And I will say that Deadly Alliance had one of the worst fighting control series in the entire series. It was almost impossible to string together combos using that system.
Mm-hmm.
Especially, like, if you're trying to train and you can't go past a certain level until you do a certain hit combo with fucking Bo Raicho, that slow fuck. So, yeah, I want to play as a big old fat drunk guy. Thank you for making that vision possible.
Ugh. Yeah, I think Deadly Alliance is what made everybody go. It's like, please let Tao Feng be good. Please let Tao Feng be good. And for the record, Tao Feng was fucking good and it deserved a fucking sequel. Period. That's it.
And Deception, I felt was a kind of like a mea culpa after Deadly Alliance.
Didn't
just
fucking
a little
care.
Bit.
Liu Kang was dead.
Well, he came back as a zombie.
No, that's not good enough. Not good enough. All right? No. Liu Kang, like, seriously, rematch. Like, when they get up to Mortal Kombat, like, 15, and they make it back up to that moment, Liu Kang better snap that motherfucker's neck. I am serious. I do not want to see this bullshit sucker punch where he's in the middle of this fight and then Quan Chi comes out like a bitch and is like, N-n-n-n-n-n. And then it's like, oh, look. Oh, sorry, buddy.
God, Silver Dragon. Ain't no shit against a sucker punch.
But, yeah, so obviously, you know, NetherRealm has always known what they were doing. Not every system's been good, but every story has been mostly good. And you've handled
palatable. Let's be generous. Palatable.
Because Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe was kind of polarizing for people. Like, oh my god, a DC fighting game. That kind of sucks. But they got it right. This story is from front to back, that whole Justice Lords storyline from Justice League. And it works. It totally works when you take, you know, an hour of television and then just stretch it out for about five.
And I was actually kind of blown away by, like, these little bits where it's like, wait a minute, did the same people behind Mortal Kombat write this? Or did they get, like, someone from DC to write this?
Yeah, you can kind of feel that there's that whole, like, the way that the whole thing's structured, it feels like a, you know, Bruce Timm is just sitting in the room going, don't do that, do this, I don't know, talk to Alan. You know, just like, that's just kind of how it feels. But the story, it plays out very, very well, and there's just small touches all over the place that make that game fantastic story-wise. Like, I'll start with the voices, because why not? Richard Epcar's Joker is amazing.
Completely underrated.
I really couldn't ask for a better Joker proxy, although there were some line reads, some lines of dialogue where I did say John DiMaggio would have done it better. But Epcar's Joker, I have always loved Epcar's Joker. I loved it since he came up with it. And for those of you that don't follow me or didn't follow me once upon a time, when I interviewed Richard Epcar, I had asked him, where did that voice come from? And he pretty much described the Mortal Kombat versus DC Universe experience as they had him in and just had him read for everybody, and they liked him as everybody. So he just picked the Joker out of a hat.
So are you saying that, you know, if on a whim we could have had Richard Epcar play Batman?
Yeah. I mean, would you...
Oh, my God.
Would you not have him as Batman?
No, I just never would have thought of it. I mean, I'm an old school otaku, so when I hear Richard Epcar, I always think, oh, yeah, 1995 Ghost in the Shell, Bateau. I can't separate him from Bateau. It's just hardwired into my brain. So I would never in a million years think to cast him as Batman in anything, even though he has that authoritative baritone. He could definitely pull it off. But I just can't do it.
But that's really how it happened. He describes it as he got to read for everybody, and then it was, well, who do you want? He actually said, I want everybody. And and he just picked the Joker. So that's who he ended up with.
Who do you want? Wonder Woman. Great Hera.
All of a sudden, Wonder Woman is Dr. Girlfriend.
Athena, help us.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, you're right. Epcar's Joker is underrated. He needs to be the Joker in more things. Between him, like, I mean, I really hate to say it, but it does really take two men to replace Mark Hamill. So between him and DiMaggio, you've got a good set of Jokers.
Oh, I forgot. Where has DiMaggio played Joker?
Under the Red Hood.
I haven't seen that.
That's a fucking crying shame.
I know.
It's one of the best ones, I swear. Top three best DCAU direct-to-DVD movies.
Lord knows there's been a lot of them, so.
Watch it tonight. It's on Netflix. Still, I think. But, yeah, so Epcar, fantastic Joker. Alan Tudyk as Barry Allen, which I want Wally back. That's who I want. And the Dio just won't let me have him anymore. It's like, well, Wally.
But you're not bitter!
Wally's on the bench. Wally is better! But Alan Tudyk's Flash is completely forgettable because he doesn't sound like Alan Tudyk at all. Adam Baldwin as Hal Jordan. I think that he's a better Hal Jordan than Nathan Fillion because Nathan Fillion's way too fucking smarmy and Hal Jordan is boring.
Come on, man. Why must you wound me?
Dude, Hal Jordan's fucking boring. He is. He's boring because he's a part of the set. I'm the Green Lantern. I'm the Flash. I'm the Batman. I'm the Superman. Like he just gets away with tons and tons of shit, and everybody's just like, well, he's the Green Lantern. Never mind the fact that there's a Green Lantern core. He's the Green Lantern. So, and it's like he's just boring and creepy and fucks little girls and no. So, give that role to Adam Baldwin and let him have it all day. Jane can be fucking Green Lantern. Tara Strong is growing very quickly into the Harley Quinn role. She's still not a perfect match for Arlene, but I think that it's getting to the point where we don't need her to be.
You committed heresy there for a lot of people.
I know a lot of people miss Arlene. A lot of people miss Arlene and a lot of people love Twilight Sparkle. But the thing is that Tara's brought in because she can do that, you know, that mall type of voice, which is fantastic. And, you know, when you're not quite paying attention, you can't really tell the difference. But if you're tuned, you always know the difference between her and Arlene. And you got to respect that Arlene just doesn't want to do it anymore. And Tara has to, you know, that's going to be Tara's role for the rest of her life. Guaranteed. So she's growing into it one performance at a time. And this one, you know, significantly better than Arkham City, I think.
I would say so, yeah. It was fairly obvious that that was not Arlene Sorkin in Arkham City. Didn't bother me as much because I'm not a big Harley Quinn fan. Can I go on a spiel on this? I've always found it really weird that so many people liked Harley Quinn. And like, okay, she's an interesting character and she does have some cute lines, but really? All of this insane amount of attention for what is essentially a Stockholm Syndrome suffering patient.
It's all about mad love, dude.
I know it's all about mad love.
Mad Love was the one that sealed the deal. That one where you just kind of realize that she is stuck. And a lot of women can, a lot of people can relate to that. That relationship that you know that they're bad for you. Like, I've been in lots of abusive relationships. I just seem to attract the crazy. And
it's me.
And, you know, like you want to leave because you know it's bad for you. You know the relationship's toxic for you, but you don't want to be alone. You don't want to be lonely. And you stick it out. You're like, well, maybe tomorrow will be better. Maybe tomorrow will be better. And, you know, a lot of people can relate to that idea that Harley is in this relationship where she's mistaking being comfortable for actual love. Like, she's comfortable in this scenario where, you know, she never knows when, you know, the Joker's gonna just backhand her immediately. So a lot of people, I think that's why a lot of people really dig Harley Quinn, is just because I think everybody, well, but you, fucking asshole, can really, you know, look back on that one relationship where it's like, yeah, I remember when there was that guy or that chick that just would punch me in the face, where I was just living this Christopher Titus-like nightmare.
Sounds like they're just living in, like, Pearl Jam's Better Man.
Honestly, that it's so common. We could poll the audience right now, like, in the comments. Just, you don't have to go into great detail, but if you have had that relationship where you should have left, and it took somebody physically, like, dragging you away, just, you know, say, I get it. You know, like, I believe in Harley Quinn. Just type that, and that's it. And for our listeners, for the people who comment, I'll tell you, man, like, it is so common, you know? It is so ridiculously common. So that's why it is that Harley Quinn is kind of one of those fan favorites. Not just because she's fun, because that's the frosting. The frosting is that she's fun. The candles is that she does, you know, silly things. And that she's kind of a badass occasionally, but, you know, the real cake, the layer cake, is those layers of, God, I know exactly what she's going through.
But outside of Tara Strong filling in that role, that
fucking Carrie Payton.
Don't know her name.
No, Carrie. It's either Carrie. I think it's Carrie Payton, but it might be Kari Payton. And dude, I'm sorry if I'm getting your name wrong, but he's the voice of Cyborg from Titans.
Oh,
he's the only, like, they recast Cyborg once and they just never did it again. They were just like, nope, we need Payton back. So Payton's back as Cyborg and he's all booyah and that's awesome. That's good enough for me, man. I'm all about that. And Patrick Seitz's Deathstroke was just, I didn't see that coming.
That was a great turn, if you ask me.
Oh man, because Patrick Seitz, you just kind of never, you can never pin him down to like, oh yeah, you would know Patrick Seitz from this or this or this. Like, he just kind of does these, like, his career is all over the place in terms of characters that he plays. You know, like, one minute he's Chopin and then the next minute he's like Ichigo's dad. And in this, it's like, next time I see the dude, I'm going to be like, dude, you were fucking awesome as Deathstroke. Who needs Ron Perlman, man?
Yeah, like that. I think his thorough dress down of Wonder Woman in the game was one of my favorite moments in the entire game. It's like, yes, Amazon's outdated war tactics.
Like, goddamn protective. Right. Oh, it was so, he was just so awesome as fucking Deathstroke.
It's like, pull your cock out and slap her in the face, why don't you?
And Jennifer Hale back as Killer Frost. Which I really don't think anybody necessarily cared that she was Killer Frost, but you go back and you watch Justice League, she is in fact Killer Frost. So she's Killer Frost and she's Hawkwoman for some reason.
I guess, you know, double down. You know, you hire a voice actress to say 10 lines in story, and then you have another character only has maybe about 20 lines in the story. It's like, yeah, why don't you voice her too?
Yeah, it's like, we need to fill out the hour. So here's 10,000 fight cues and then 50 whole actual spoken lines. There you go.
You get to act for 50 lines. No grunt in the microphone for 2 hours.
Yeah, now tell me about how great it was being the voice of Samus. God. Just as an aside, whenever someone asks her, what was it like being the voice of Samus in Metroid Prime? And it's like, honestly, I would just answer that question like, it's no different from me taking a really hard shit. She didn't say a fucking word. Why would you ask her that? It's like, yes, it's an honor to be the voice of Samus. I didn't say a word. Could we not treat this like it's as big a deal? But that's just how I feel. That's just my opinion. I could be wrong.
Let's take a moment here to thank Injustice for finally giving Aquaman his due.
Now, before we do that...
Okay, before we do that...
Do you think that they put Phil Lamar as the voice of Aquaman because they just couldn't figure out what else to do with him? Because they put him... They put him in everything. And I'm not talking about one of those like, oh, it's Steve Bloom, he's in everything. No, I'm talking about like, whenever there's a cape, man, fucking Phil is there. And they just didn't have any other black people. So they didn't
have... John Stewart wasn't going to be in this game. So.
Like, yeah, no John Stewart and no Static. So no John Stewart, no Static, and no Steel. So they were just like,
Well, you played Samurai Jack, right? Just use your Samurai Jack voice and be Aquaman.
And to me, like, if I had my way, I'd just say, why don't you just cast John DiMaggio again? He still is the best Aquaman I've ever heard.
Because his Aquaman was stupid.
His Aquaman was great.
I'm not saying it's not great. DiMaggio's Aquaman is fucking amazing. I'm saying it's dumb. It is Thor in the Incredible Hulk TV movie dumb. All right, that's what I'm saying. It is not like, you know, hail the King of Atlantis. It's hail Green Monster. You over there? You know, like it's. I love that Simon, voice.
Get me a drink.
I love that voice. I love him in Brave and the Bold. I would never ever make him Aquaman. Like, the dude who played Aquaman in Justice League, like, he was really good. He was kind of scary. And, you know, and DiMaggio can do scary, but if DiMaggio were cast as Aquaman, all I would think of is, you know, like, ho, villain! You know, like, it just would be ruined for me. So, a better choice being Phil than John.
I know, technically, it would not fit the tone if John DiMaggio was Aquaman.
That would seriously be like, all right, so why don't we get Diedrich Bader? Get Diedrich Bader and he could be Bats. Like, oh god, here we go.
But here's the thing, Diedrich Bader as Bats could still fit the tone. He still has that really deep baritone voice. Just don't give him such lines like, I don't dislike Christmas, I dislike crime. You just don't give him lines like that. Alright?
Yeah, like somebody was watching too much Brave and the Bold when they were writing the first Arkham Asylum game when Batman said, I eat punks like these for breakfast. Because that was a Diedrich Bader line. How amazing, because Kevin Conroy just destroyed that line. Like, there was no way he could have made that line sound cool. But Diedrich Bader? Diedrich would have just come in and be like, I eat pugs like these for breakfast. It would have been amazing. It would have been fucking hilarious then. Because it was unintentionally hilarious as delivered by Kevin Conroy because it was a bad line. But that said, like, you can't, like, Diedrich's all over the fucking place, but you still can't, like, take him too seriously when he does that Hoss Delgado voice. Because that's what it'll always be. Sorry, kids. Like, fuck Batman. It'll always be Hoss Delgado. Let's disco. So Kevin Conroy is Batman. He's always great as Batman. George Newbern as Superman. Round of applause. The man is back. He's like, fuck you, Timmy. Don't need your shit. Like, why don't you jump on a plane or something, asshole? You know, just like, oh, man, George Newbern, Superman it sounds like Superman should. Not that Tim Daly never sounded like Superman. It's just that when George, you know, came in, it was like, dude, that's real Superman. That is like the most serious you can take Superman, I think, when you hear George Newbern's version of Superman. Like, he sounds kind when he has to sound kind, but when he's angry, oh, my God.
Yeah, that moment where, like, he's looking off to the side and he's talking to Lex and he's like, do you think there was a Lois on their planet?
Yeah.
And you can he has that really authoritative voice, but there is that sense of vulnerability in that the way he just kind of delivered that.
Yeah, like, beautiful, beautiful fucking delivery there. And the rest of the cast is just kind of like, who cares? You know, like, dude playing Nightwing, who cares? The person playing Wonder Woman, whose name I never remember, I'm glad she came back. Don't really care. Really didn't like the way that the Wonder Woman model was built because it just kind of looked like she was wearing a corset and her tits were out too far and it looked really awkward.
Well, let's be fair. The guy who played Lex Luthor did a pretty good turn.
No, here's the thing. He did a very good turn, but there are two great Lex Luthors, in my opinion. One is Clancy Brown. Always going to be Clancy Brown. And the other one is John Shea. John Shea as Lex Luthor in Lois and Clark, The Adventures of Superman, was amazing. He was everything that Kevin Spacey could never be in his Gene Hackman impression of Lex Luthor.
Wrong!
Yeah. Like, he was just, Spacey did the best he could, and, you know, Spacey can act circles around tons of dudes all day, blindfolding with his hands tied behind his back, but there was no way he could replace Gene Hackman. And that's not to say that Gene Hackman was good. He was this Midwest huckster, which, yeah, that's the old Lex Luthor. He was this Midwestern fucking huckster. I get that. And I can still watch old Superman movies and go, yeah, Gene Hackman was really good in this. But that's not the contemporary Lex Luthor. So now I just kind of look at it like it's a joke. So when you stick Kevin Spacey in that role, it's not nearly as good. And that means that the number of people who have played a contemporary Lex Luthor is like fewer than the amount of, you know, fingers you have on your hand. It's Clancy Brown, John Shea, Michael Rosenbaum, whoever this dude is that played Lex Luthor in Injustice. And really, those are the ones that I consider to be really, really good. James Marsters as Lex Luthor was creepy and miscast and kind of terrible. And when he's like having punch sex with Superman in Superman Doomsday, and he's like, "Who's your daddy?" And I'm just like, "No, no, bad Spike, bad." You know, it's like red and green, the colors of Christmas. And it's like, "No,
no."
So that's what I'm saying, is that there really have only been four great Lex Luthors, and this new guy playing Lex Luthor in Injustice, he definitely gets my vote for it. Like, yeah, you're actually a really, really good Lex Luthor. And that means that these guys beat out, I guess it's maybe like somewhere close to seven or eight other actors that have all tried to play Lex Luthor and just fucking failed.
I can't even find the actor's name on IMDb. This is actually getting really kind of, oh, here it is. Mark Rolston.
Never even heard of the dude, but you want to know what? Hats off to you. You do a really good Lex Luthor. Yeah, the rest of the cast just kind of rounds out to, like, who gives a shit.
Oh, well, no wonder. He is Lex Luthor on Young Justice.
And that would be the problem, is that I haven't seen all of Young Justice yet. I haven't seen more than three episodes of Young Justice, and now it's canceled, so now I can catch up with the whole thing as soon as I slap it on Netflix. Thanks, Warner Brothers.
Thank you.
But, yeah. So with the whole, with so many like all-star choices in the cast, it really does help sell you, like resell you, because that's the hard part, is taking a story that everyone's already familiar with, adding gameplay, and then reselling you that experience for 5 hours straight.
Can I just say that the Tara Strong's return as Raven is one of the weirdest casting decisions I've ever heard?
Is that Tara Strong as Raven in Injustice?
Yeah, that is Tara Strong returning as Raven, except now she's not a teenager anymore.
And now she's all weird and creepy sexy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't good.
I'm sorry, I can only think of Raven as her teenage self. I can't think of her as like the alien, you know, fucking demon god that she is.
That's it. Well, then that's it. It's settled. Tara can have older, weird, sexy Raven, and then Cax can be teen Raven from now on.
Okay, there we are. Oh. All right, you hear that, Warner Brothers? All right, it's set. Okay, get Cax that role. Get her on Teen Titans Go! Come on!
Oh, that one's already set in stone. And that's something else. Like, that is something else that this fucking game is sorely missing. It is missing Scott Menville. I want Scott Menville. I don't care where. I just love Scott Menville.
Something.
Just anything. I don't care. Give me like Jimmy the Turtle Boy and then fucking make Scott Menville Jimmy Olsen. just give me Scott Menville, man.
Scott Menville. I don't know. Mix a Spidlick. He could do it. I don't care.
He could totally do that shit. But as one little last thing, the good news has finally come down from on high at NetherRealm. The main man cometh. Fucking Omo DLC. I was like, he's the only dude missing now, man.
Oh, man. But it's not Brad Garrett.
But it's not Brad Garrett, and that kills me. It kills me dead. I wish, because there is no other Lobo. There is only one Lobo, and it's the main man, man. It's fucking Brad Garrett, and it's just not fair.
It's not fair, but on the other hand, looking at his moves, like the trailer, the DLC trailer for him, it was... Oh my god, this is fucking Lobo. Like, his super move is just classic Lobo. Have you seen it?
No, I haven't seen the trailer yet.
Oh my god, he drags you behind his motorcycle all around, and then he flips you off, and then he burns you with his tailpipes.
Oh my god, yes. See, because that's what you need, man. Like, all these serious characters, you need... Hey, that's what this game is missing. It's missing Lobo and Plastic Man.
Oh, I would trust him. That's a Plastic Man. I would fucking cartwheel backwards with a firecracker in my ass if I could get Plastic Man in this game.
And Tom Kenny as Plastic Man.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh!
Plastic Man in the game. It's Tom Kenny. There is no audition. There's no casting call. There's no nothing. You call Tom immediately, and you're like, SpongeBob, suit up. it's Plastic Man time.
Plastic Man. Oh, damn. Can I tell you one thing that I kind of was let down by the game, story-wise? I wish that Shazam had a bigger part in this game. Because I have a soft spot in my heart for Shazam. I really do. Because it's the idea of his character that really interests me. What would you do? I mean, what would a little boy do if he had all the powers
cosmic
of Superman?
Power, yeah. It's all like and really, you know, I love the character of Billy Batson a lot. Because Superman Shazam, The Return of Black Adam, I think was the best telling, one of the best tellings of the Batson story. Because I just went back and watched Brave and the Bold, and they show Batson, who's voiced by Tara. Because they just can't find little boys in Hollywood anymore, apparently. And it's a really sweet telling, you know, but I kind of prefer this idea that, like, Batson's living in this terrible fucking rundown crack house. Like, that life has just gone so bad for this kid. And then, you know, the wizard comes up and is like, here you go, here's ridiculous fucking superpowers. Oh yeah, by the way, clean that up. You know?
You know, it's like, you can't keep a good boy down. Crack.
Yeah.
It's burned with a crack pipe.
But,
I think the biggest thing about this game to me, other than the really well casted story and such, is the fact that the gameplay is just everything you want a superhero bout to be.
It's true.
Crazy, over-the-top powers, just slamming, you know, just absolutely insane amount of, like, insane fights that you can get in. It's incredible. Like, I said in my review that there haven't been fights like this since, like, through the eyes of an 8-year-old just smashing his action figures together with wicked glee.
And it's true. It really is. They really, you know, pulled out all the stops. They did everything that makes sense for every single character, and... every super move makes a whole lot of sense. The transitions, I still say that my favorite transition is in Arkham.
Oh, yeah, where all of a sudden you get knocked into a blanket party by the Riddler and Penguin and Killer Croc.
Yeah, that is the single best transition in the game, because it's like, where's all these guys? Oh, they're in there. We don't go in there.
We don't go in there. They're like, they hate it when people go, you just open the door when they're having their poker game. I think a close second to me is in the Wayne Manor, where you can literally knock a person over a roof and they'll crash land into like an old abandoned part of the manor.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, every other transition is just like you busting through shit and who really cares. But in Arkham, it's like, hey, cameos, bang, 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 bang. I did like...
Oh, Superman, the Fortress of Solitude was also pretty good, because the area you get knocked into has a Starro parasite.
Yeah, just fucking sitting there.
And you can knock it over, and the Starro parasite just wanders away.
You know, it's like, oh, come on, man. Just, like, hold on to him for, like, 10 seconds or something. Jesus Christ. Come on, help me out, dude.
You want Starro the Conqueror to wreck your shit? Come on, get that back in the bell jar.
Oh, my God. It just lets them crawl away. But I mean, all the stages are designed really well. Like Giganta fighting, what's the dude's name? Atom Smasher?
I think so.
Yeah. Where you can also like hear them fighting in the background. There's like grunting and shit. And I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty cool. That's not bad.
I wish Martian Manhunter would get out of the background and help me fight this bitch. Come on, Marcy, come on. What are you doing? You're just floating there. You're not even thinking, okay? What are you trying to locate? A box of popcorn to watch this fight? Come on! Help me out here!
But, yeah, the stages are really... They're really well designed, and that's... And honestly, because you want to know what it feels like? It feels like guys at NetherRealm just looked at Smash Brothers and just remembered how they felt when they played it and went, we're going to do that for this game. That first moment when you play the first Smash Brothers and you're fighting on top of fucking Hyrule Castle and you hear the music and your inner child just lit up like a Christmas tree. You're like, I know this place, you know? That first time that you play Green Greens, like, it's like, oh, I know it. You're Wispy Woods and shit. Like, that's what they recreated. You know, they put you in these places that you've been looking at for, as a comic book fan, for your entire life, which have had very little life pumped into them over, you know, the course of our lives. And then all of a sudden, these places are living, breathing environments with destructible panels and characters walking around in the background and spray painting graffiti and all the shit that they couldn't show you in the DC animated universe. It's really significantly good stuff. Like, if you haven't bought Injustice yet, you have a reason to. Like, if you are at all a fan of DC Comics, you have a reason to.
This is, like, one of the best love letters for DC fans I've ever played.
Yeah, because...
Even more than the Arkham games. Even more than, like, Arkham Asylum and Arkham City. Because this is just a loving tribute to every character, I feel.
Yeah, and... You know, Marvel can't accomplish that. And no, I don't count Marvel versus Capcom. I really don't, because it's, I mean, they show you shit and it's like, yeah, I guess that shit's there. Umbrella Corporation. Like, oh, look, I'm in a Tri-Cell facility. Oh, nice. But it's missing something. Like, it feels less organic and more novelty. Like, look at what we're showing you. And really it's, the amount of shit that they do right in Marvel vs. Capcom 3 is outweighed by the amount of shit that they do wrong in terms of presentation.
And I always felt that Marvel vs. Capcom always... Like, Marvel was riding on the coattails of Capcom through most of the games.
Yeah, like, it's not the Marvel game. And then when Marvel tried to strike out on their own and be like, here's Marvel Nemesis, like, ugh. That didn't go too well.
No.
And that's really the lesson. Don't let your fucking publisher jam a bunch of crap characters that don't exist up your ass in order to get your game done. If you can't get it done on your own, if you can't be the one doing the bending over, then just don't do it.
It's just not at all worth it. But I'm so fucking glad I got to play this game, and I think it's now time to throw down. What are some of your favorite super moves?
I would say that definitely not Superman. I mean, I'm a whore for the Flash, so.
So, like, that he runs across the equator to deliver this gigantic sound wave punch.
Goddamn right. Deathstroke, definitely.
Or he just shoots you a bunch of times.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's just fucking awesome.
I'm not denying the awesomeness of it, just not exactly very creative.
And Cyborg with the Sonic Disruptor. Like, that shit's just cool to watch.
That is very cool to watch. Highlight for me, as always, the Aquaman super move. He just feeds into a gigantic shark that he summons out of nowhere.
I couldn't take it seriously, especially when they show you, like, Aquaman versus evil Aquaman. Like, because you know how that fight would actually go. It'd be like, whoop, 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 and then the fucking shark comes over, and then evil Aquaman is just like, whoop, 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 and then the shark turns around, and it's just this whoop, 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 whoop fight, where the shark just goes, fuck this shit, I'm leaving.
the shark goes, fuck this shit, I'm going to eat both of you.
And then the fucking Aquaman's like, Bruce, no! And then fucking shit just gets really dark for a minute.
You're manipulative assholes. You think, like, Aquaman's fucking, like, animal friends are getting a little jealous or, like, really angry at him? Like, dude, I was trying to feed my kids. What? You want me to get you a soda? Really? Soda's, like, right there, man. Right fucking there. You don't even have to take 10 steps, but you know. No. Now that you can telepathically control any marine life, you're going to use it to get yourself some fucking soda. All right. Yeah. Glad. How do you feel, superhero, huh? Enslaving animals?
Mm-hmm. So that, and for the record, Aquaman with a goatee, the whole evil goatee thing, I really didn't think.
That was awesome. Come on.
That was stupid as shit.
That was stupid.
Oh, man. Anyway.
But they're evil. They don't have the goatee.
So, the funny thing is that I went through Netflix and watched Justice League before I got Injustice, because I was kind of trying to ramp myself up to get excited for Injustice. You watched it after.
I watched it after, because I was just like, oh, man. Oh, God. It took me a long time before I realized, I haven't watched Justice League in like 10 years. I probably haven't watched it since I first saw it on Cartoon Network when I was 12 years old. But, man, I should go back to it, and I'm so glad I did.
Yeah, there isn't really a single bad episode.
There is a bad storyline, but it really doesn't really make any sense.
What, Starcrossed?
Oh, no, Fury. The Fury storyline where, okay, escaped Amazonian goes out, makes this parasite, or no, it was a mutagen that kills off every man on the planet. Okay, I can accept the fact that she magically created this germ that is allowed to do that because, well, she has a book that says germ warfare that dates back to the 20th century. Okay, all right, fine, she has that. Okay, but then, like, this germ is somehow able to affect not only men of alien men, like Kryptonians and Martians, but is also able to affect undead men, like fucking Solomon Grundy.
Yeah, I didn't really. Yeah, that wasn't okay. That was, but that's really the only, because I guess that one was so bad that I just didn't really think about it. But yeah, you're right. But I'm hard pressed to think of, like, I mean, I know that there are weak episodes, but I think that weak episodes are saved by stunt casting. But yeah, I mean, every episode of that show is either, you know, funny when it's supposed to be funny, or touching when it's supposed to be touching. Badass when it's supposed to be badass with the fucking finale. Fucking epilogue was amazing. I could watch that. I could seriously watch that episode. It's like on repeat for hours. Just go back, start with Batman Beyond, get to the very dead end of Batman Beyond, and then just go and watch epilogue.
Would you say, like, on its own, would you say that DC has, like, a better batting average when it comes to cartoon shows?
Well, there's no argument from anybody anywhere that Marvel has never been able to get their shit together, because Marvel has always been on the teetering edge of bankruptcy and Avi whoring out every single franchise he possibly can, every single studio he possibly can. Where I've been persisting that as soon as Disney bought Marvel, they called Avi Arad into their offices and just set it out like, Spider-Man's at Sony Pictures. These people are fucking Paramount. This franchise is here. What the fuck were you doing? You know, like, that's always been my persistence, that, you know, they just can't hold on to anything. Like, the 90s just tapped them out in terms of talent and good decisions, because they had X-Men nobody saw coming was fantastic. Spider-Man was fantastic. The Iron Man show, it was good. It wasn't good enough. The Incredible Hulk show was good. It wasn't good enough. And now we're in the middle of every single reboot on the face of the franchises, and Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes was amazing. Sorry, you can't live anymore. Spectacular Spider-Man was really great. Josh Keaton was a really great fucking Spider-Man. Sorry, can't deal with that anymore. So, sorry, you're out of here. It's Ultimate Spider-Man now. We're going to get a new Spidey. So Marvel's just, and now we've got fucking Avengers Assemble. And I know Avengers Assemble is going to be good, because they have, you know, they have all the new leadership, and they've got a really strong voice cast, and they've got Travis Willingham as Thor, and he's a really good Thor. But I don't know, like, I feel really bad, because I'm more of a Marvel guy than a DC guy, because I'm always going to be the first person to say that Marvel is just pick up and read them action comics, and DC is deep penetrating stories that are told well. Every time Marvel tries to do deep and penetrating, they just poke themselves in the ass. So I really, you know, it's tough to admit sometimes, but yeah, Marvel after the 90s, they just could not get their shit together. They still do not have their shit together, and Disney XD isn't going to fucking change shit. While DC, the most crushing blow that they've suffered is that Bruce Timm's gone. He finally packed up his shit and left. And that was with a blank check under him. He still fucking left.
It's like, I don't want to be known as, like, the DC Animated Universe guy, even though he's basically been with them since Inception, really.
Since you were still shitting your pants.
Yeah.
So, it's a crushing blow, but the team that he built is still there. You know, it's but now fucking even DC's taking the fucking piss. Like, it's like, sorry, Young Justice, gone. Brave and the Bold, gone. It's like, all right, so what are you looking for? You know, you're like, all right, you've got Titans Go up and running, and it's not really serious. It's kind of more of a joke, but it's, you know, everybody wanted the Titans back. We're getting the Titans back. We're getting, and really, it's not so much about getting Titans back as about getting that version of Titans back with that voice cast. Again, people fucking love Scott Menville. it's like Scott Menville and Greg Sipes and Peyton and fucking Strong. And, it's like, that's it. Dreamcast right there. Bang. Done. I don't care what they're in. I just want those people in a show. So, I mean, yeah, that works out, but, you know, DC's taking the piss because it's like, okay, so if Young Justice is gone, what the fuck are you looking for? Because Legion of Superheroes sure as shit didn't work out, and Young Justice was fucking fantastic, but apparently it wasn't fantastic enough. What the fuck are you looking for? You know, because it's like, it's not going to be Justice League every single goddamn time. Superman the Animated Series happened. Batman the Animated Series happened. Justice League happened. Justice League Unlimited happened. Titans happened. And even though we're always going to go back to the trough, you know, sometimes you're going to suck the sludge at the bottom of the trough before somebody refills it. So you got to, you know, stick it out, because if you're thirsty, you're fucking thirsty and you're going to have to drink the shit.
That's a very colorful metaphor there. Did you just came up with that?
Yeah.
Actually kind of apt. Eerily apt.
So, you know, like, I want DC to continue doing what it is that they do. I want Warner Brothers to continue doing what they do with fucking DC, but I think that everybody's kind of on edge right now with Man of Steel. Because the third Batman movie was fucking shitty, and Man of Steel is the second attempt at rebooting a franchise, and this time it's not a dovetail, it's a full-on reboot with, you know, new people, new cast, new direction, no, you know, I don't want to see him in the suit, I don't want to see him fly, and I want a giant spider in the third act.
Actually, I would have killed to see that movie. I'm not going to lie, I want to see that fucking Superman movie where, you know, Kevin Smith written, that fucking John Peters produced Superman film where fucking Spicoli, fucking Sean Penn is Superman. Wouldn't you want to see that movie?
After I saw the pictures of what Nicolas Cage looked like in Tim Burton's Superman suit, no.
Just well, this is back in, like, if... before the movie got shifted to Tim Burton. Let's say, like, the movie was going to happen as John Peters had intended with Kevin Smith writing.
I'm sure it would have been fairly interesting, but it's like, no. Because there's just been... Superman is just not a franchise that skips well. Fucking Batman isn't a franchise, live action, that skips well. It just kind of takes a leap and then falls flat on its face. And it took Nolan to kind of drag it out of the dirt, which is fantastic, but, you know, like, everybody's on edge because of Man of Steel, and, you know, I'm seeing action finally in these trailers, but I'm still seeing a whole lot of You'll Believe a Man Can Cry. So I'm not going to say that Man of Steel is the trigger that they're waiting on getting pulled, but I'm saying that it's probably tied to a shit ton of decisions, because if Man of Steel smashes at the box office, watch how many animated series come out. Like, if Man of Steel smashes at the box office, we will have a new Superman series.
And I'm all for that. And to be fair to the movie, at least it looks like this Superman kind of realizes that he has it pretty good as far as his powers are concerned, because it looks like he actually enjoys using him. Like, you could actually see him and kind of enjoy flying for flying's sake, or being that strong, but still kind of pretending like the handcuffs can hold him.
Yeah.
So. And that is far and away something that we haven't seen, I don't think, ever in a Superman film. I don't think, like, there was that moment in the old school Superman 1980 where he was like,
No, I mean, there was a scene in the original Superman live actions where he was like flying with Lois and Margot Kidder was trying to not look crazy.
The crazy was always there, but she was better at hiding.
So, but I mean, when it was Donner, you know, it was You'll Believe a Man Can Fly, and it was about wonder. It was about, you know, it was almost like kind of whimsical. in a way, making a man convincingly fly, and that was portrayed in on screen. But with Singer's Superman, it was about you'll believe a man can not pay child support, and with Man of Steel, it's a whole lot more of you'll believe a man can cry, and I'm not digging it. Not quite yet. And in the meantime, I really do think it's what's driving a nail into, you know, because I think that DC is just kind of sitting back, seeing what happens. That Warner Brothers is sitting back and seeing what happens to see. It's like, okay, what direction are we going to go in? If Man of Steel really fucking breaks the bank, then that's it. We need a new Superman series. Beware the Bat looks like shit. No one fucking cares. Green Lantern shouldn't have got canceled, because even though it didn't look amazing, because Bruce Timm's style just does not translate to 3D well at all, it was still good, and I was getting Josh Keaton in something. I was happy with that.
Josh Keaton, ow!
But apparently, you know, good enough isn't enough for Warner Brothers anymore, because, you know, they gotta sell toys. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just that, you know, these series, because the main problem in comics is that dedicated comic readers are our age and older, and we are set. We do not take advertising well. We don't need to be told what to buy, because we've already decided what it is that we're going to buy. And the problem is that cartoons are made for children. And even though the Pixar method of pander to kids right for adults works and make sure that series are amazing looking, and, you know, and that's what the kids care about, but they, you know, they read amazingly, and that's what the parents who are forced to watch care about. At the end of the day, you know, if you keep punching above the brow, then, you know, like, the kids don't care, they're not going to ask for toys, and then series goes the fuck away. You know, like, if Transformers went into full-on, let's just entertain parents mode, like, let's entertain the new generation of nerd parents mode, and just left the kids behind, Hasbro wouldn't blink twice about yanking it. But, you know, Transformers Prime is sight gags, and it's got G1 stuff in there. But, you know, and the G1 stuff is for the hardcore fans, but at the end of the day, it's sight gags and Starscream falling down, and yes, Lord Megatron, you know, like, that's, like, and that's what makes kids laugh, so, and that's, at the end of the day, that's what's going to make them walk into fucking Wally World and go, I want RC!
I can't stand people just screaming, like, why can't I have this? Why can't I have that? Especially from people from our age, because they think that this is where, like they think that they are the source of the company's money, when in reality, it's just a small fraction of the amount of money they make off of their properties.
Yeah, because we keep screaming about, like, we're the audience. We were the audience for Young Justice. Okay, well, did you buy the Young Justice toys? Because we made toys for Young Justice. Are we made toys for this? Are we made toys for that? Were you buying those toys? Well, no, you're right, because those toys weren't made for you, because that series wasn't made for you. The references in the series were made for you. We put this in the background because we knew you'd know what it was. But the other 22 fucking minutes were for your kids or for your little brother.
It's just this... It's really maddening to try to sit through. And this is why I'm kind of on edge with the Superman film, because I will say that it looks like a Superman take on the Batman kind of look, as it were, especially in the way the story is looking, and especially the way it's filmed, and especially in the way that it just generally looks. You know what I mean? Like, Nolan Batman always had that certain kind of color scheme where there's slate grays and
it
dark.
Looks like Gears of War.
Yeah, it looks like Gears of War. And even when you're in a fantastical universe, and you're on fucking Krypton, looks like Gears of War.
And see, normally I would say that doesn't work, but the point is, you make it look like Gears of War so that when the red and blue comes out, it pops.
It pops. I'll say, like, from a color scheme, it works, but this is unmistakably Nolan kind of touches. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, you can feel Nolan's influence in the background because he is in the background. He literally is in the background going, Zach, I know you like awkwardly long sex scenes, but you can't do that in this movie.
Especially for PG-13.
Yeah. Like, I'm really sorry. You know, 300 was good, except for that 3 minutes where you made it real awkward. Watchmen was good, except for that 4 minutes where you made it real awkward.
Hallelujah.
Seriously. Oh, my
God. God, that was... When I watched that in theaters, that made everyone in the house crack up.
Dude, I'm telling you, man. Fucking Zack Snyder should be making films for fucking Skinemax if he keeps doing that shit. But yeah, you know, Nolan, you can see Nolan's influence. You can feel Nolan's influence because he really is sitting there. And on the opposite end of the farm, fucking Singer is, you know, tapping dudes on the shoulder going, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why would you do this shit in Days of Future Past? You know, like that's what it is that each studio is finding their franchise head at this point. They're finding their Bruce Timm. And they're just, you know, sitting them down and going like, all right, look, you're going to get an EP credit. And we just need you to make sure that people aren't fucking up. It's like, so you're seriously just going to pay me to sit here and tell people how to do their job, which used to be my job? Yes. All right, cool. So long as the check clears.
Which makes me wonder what, you know, after he's done with Batman. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he's going to return to a directorial helm, even if they offer him, hey, Superman did well. Do you want to direct a Justice League movie?
No, they're already talking about, like, if Man of Steel pops off proper, then Snyder's probably got Justice League.
Probably got Justice League. Which, you know, like, I'll give Zack Snyder one thing. He knows how to frame an awesome fight. And in something like a Justice League movie, you want an awesome fight, and you want it framed properly. You either get fucking Zack Snyder, or you get Roland Emmerich.
Like, hey, we're gonna make this movie about the world ending and a bunch of dudes in capes saving it. You want to do it, Roland? It's like, I suppose.
Come on, you tell me that as crappy as 2012 was, that did not look amazing.
There's some new fucking Roland Emmerich movie coming out where as soon as I saw the first like 30 seconds of the trailer, it's like, it's a fucking Roland Emmerich movie. Because that's all the dude does is he just blows shit up, except he's like the anti-Michael Bay, because while Michael Bay is like, I'm going to do this with practical effects and like 200 million feet of deck cord, Roland's just like, how much will it cost to do that in post?
And even, with that said, he still knows how to frame it properly. He still knows how to make it pop visually.
Yeah, but you kind of wonder what that dude dreams about at night.
Having tea in a blank beige room.
He just dreams
and he wakes up from it and he's like, oh my God.
That's his nightmare. Roland Emmerich's nightmare is that everything's okay. He's like in a blank beige room, fucking drinking tea, and like he's reading the paper and it's just a big headline that says, everything's okay.
Everything is as it should be.
World peace. Ozone clothes, like, and he just wakes up in a cold sweat, like, oh my God.
His wife wakes up next to him, oh my God, did you have that dream again, honey?
Immediately turns on Fox News. He's like, oh, thank God, everything is good.
Everything is as it should be. Shitty. I can't exploit primal fears for my own personal gain.
Oh. So many jokes that we shouldn't make and will not make. So, because we could talk world terror right now, but we won't. We will only send our thoughts, prayers, and support. That's a nice, healthy hour and probably 45 minutes of Super Tool Shed.
And we still got to do the comment section. We're
not doing comments. Our comment of the day is, well, our comment of the episode is, dude, I think he actually posted on the BenTheSage.com site. This dude just cracked me up. Let's see. What was it? No, not the framed Halo poster. Because fuck that guy. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to hold you accountable for this. Nucleon on our website left a comment on Dominion Tank Police today saying, do you have to use bitches to refer to women all the time? It's getting a little tiresome. Can't you spice it up with some babes? Just no shoties, please.
Just no shoties?
No shoties. Hey, shouty.
Hey, shouty.
All right, now I'm gonna take a little bit of responsibility for this because it's above everything else that I do for the, and you're actually gonna like this, Bennett, because I thought about this the other day that I'm secretly calling this the Bennett work. Of all the things that I do for the Bennett work, one of the things is kind of keeping Bennett from treading mud holes into things. And that includes redundancies in the script. And that's kind of like, okay, let's just change the vernacular from here to there. And when we were writing that script, we were kind of too busy laughing at it for me to actually sit there and go like, man, he is using the word bitch a whole lot. But here's my stance. My stance is that Valkyrie bitch is the term. And the reason why is because it's like bitches are crazy. Not bitches are crazy in a bad way, but like bitches are crazy. They're rabid. And you're right. They eat the cocks of lesser men. And I like that as a term. And a lot of our female friends like that as a term because it's endearing in the sense where, you know, like forget all these women that walk around with bitch written on their ass. You're not bitchy. You're just unpleasant. And don't talk to me about why it is that I read something that was written on your ass when you put lettering on your ass in the first place. Valkyrie bitch is, you know, the people that we actually really highly respect, not just these fictional characters, but women in general in our lives, like people that we've known or wish that we could know that, you know, they don't sit here and go like, oh no, the end of the world, my nail broke. But they're, you know, they're more ready to, you know, punch people out in a bar fight, and yet they're still sophisticated enough, smart enough, savvy enough to have like civilized conversation, have some fun, you know, make fun of the fact that they have breasts. You know, it's not a detriment to the Valkyrie bitch to be born a woman, because the fact is that they make swords for every shape and size and every head cut.
I invented the term Valkyrie bitch to basically cheer up a friend of mine. It was just my little way of saying, like, you know, it's, you gotta be a Valkyrie bitch, right? You gotta be able to look inside yourself and find a strength that sometimes you feel like you don't have and just own it. And I feel like the best phrase to invent for that kind of person is just a Valkyrie bitch. It's just something that is inherently strong, tied to a word that has negative connotations, but through the qualifier of the first word, suddenly takes on a whole new meaning. It's owning the word, as it were, and wearing it like a badge of honor.
Now, that's to justify the term Valkyrie bitch. Now, as for the overuse of the word bitch in the Dominion Tank Police review, yeah, that's our fault.
That's probably
that is totally our fault. It's Bennett's fault for writing bitch in that many times and my fault for not calling him on it. I will try harder in the future to, because I'm never gonna censor little Benny, but I'm definitely going to say it's like, all right, can we just replace this with chick or, you know, jubblies or something?
Jubblies or something, because let's face it, Valkyrie chick just doesn't have the same kind of bite, does it?
No, it just doesn't punctuate as well, and that's really what it's about. It's about wordplay and a self-terminating word, a word that punctuates itself, a word that a term that is so good that it needs no extra punctuation. And if you make a zero punctuation joke, I'm gonna fucking punch you when I see you.
I wasn't even going to make it. All right, you made it for me.
God damn it. But yeah, you know, we're always trying to massage words in the script that we feel are being used way too often. And honestly, just one last story. The reason why it is that we're doing Women's Month is because when I first met Bennett, there were a lot of people that were just kind of coming up to me like, you're friends with that Bennett dude. He hates chicks. And
so this is the first time I'm hearing this.
No, it's not. It's not because... when I brought it to Bennett, it was like I don't hate women, and the phrasing was, dude, you're a fat kid on the internet making rape jokes, and you tweeted it. The point is that, you know, the character of the Sage is many things to many people in the review universe, which is a term that Bennett hates so much. But the thing is that the character nor the man hates women. We don't hate women. We like strong women. We love Valkyrie bitches. I really love Valkyrie bitches. I was raised by a Valkyrie bitch. As such, I just kind of made the decision, like, you know, maybe we should start talking about having a women's month, this month that has just lead female protagonists. Now, in the spirit of Anime Abandon, not all of these movies are going to be good, and therefore it means that the portrayal of the main female protagonist isn't going to be 100% awesome. But it is a month, which it might not even be the same month next year. We don't even know. But it is a month where we can focus squarely on female protagonists in anime and show them kicking a whole bunch of ass, and not necessarily in a sexy way.
Especially not with Virgin Fleet.
Especially not with fucking Virgin Fleet. Jesus Christ.
Jesus Christ, indeed. Oh, God. I wanted to say, like, when we were first mapping out what Women's Month on Anime Abandoned was going to be, we had an idea that, why don't we just do a character study of Motoko Kusanagi? Because if there is one strong female, like, if there was one queen of all the Valkyrie bitches, it's Motoko. And she's not even technically a real woman, biologically speaking.
But
that just kind of slipped through the cracks.
Because first it was Motoko, and then it was, all right, well, we can't just do an entire month where we're dissecting Motoko, because it's like, that's going to get old really fast. And then we're gonna fucking blow the ability to do standalone complex in the future, or the other two movies. So then it went from, all right, so then let's do individual things. And then we talked about doing Iria. We talked about, because I really wanted to do Iria, because I still, you know, like all these sci-fi channel shows, like the reason why they're happening is because I was raised on that. Like, that's what I watched. Bennett didn't have sci-fi channel. He's made this abundantly clear. So all these sci-fi channels, you can squarely thank me for them showing up on the show. And as such, I wanted to do Iria Zerum the Animation, but it just turned out to be, you know, for the amount of time, and we wanted to do a 1-2-3 month, and it just wouldn't have allowed it. So it transitioned from that to like Read or Die to just a bunch of shit where we're like, what the fuck are we going to do? And eventually we found the three series that we can sort of kick off with as like worst, not so bad, best. But we really wanted to make this month happen because, you know, we need, it's not like I need to kind of change people's mind about the character of the Sage, because I didn't fucking create him. I only came in like 20 some odd episodes ago. But, I don't think that that's really a good stigma to have.
I wouldn't say it's much of a stigma. I think it's just a general idea of what a character or what I am supposed to be like, just from, without making it clear, or at least not further explaining some statements or jokes that people didn't exactly take the right way.
Although I'll admit, we totally went the other way with Gulf Wars because that shit was fucking funny. All right, the Ripley's joke was fucking funny.
Okay, come on, let's face it, people. The Ripley's joke, hilarious.
So, that's it. Look forward to Women's Month. It is going to be a 1-2-3 month, and you already know what one is, so 2 and 3 are totally going to be a mystery. We'll the next time we record Super Tool Shed, we're going to see you right around the number 2. Mm-hmm. And number 3, I think everybody's really, really going to enjoy.
I know I did writing it.
So, until next time, I would like to say the closing comment that obviously smack on the top of the site, there is the tip jar. We're not going to be pimping it too much just because of the fact that we are not naked profiteering. This is just, we've got a lot of stuff planned. So you donate if you want and if you can. There is no pressure, and we're not saying to fund our lives. We're saying that props and gas and moving around and getting shit coordinated and getting, it costs making money.
And then basically anyone who helps either on my end or on the Mark's end, just to make sure that they're fed and happy, you know, because we're not paying them, but we're at least, you know, giving them like
concessions.
So like, you took some time out of your day that is very busy. We want to at least, we can't pay you. Let's just at least make it as comfortable as possible. So here, have a muffin and a cup.
And right now, Bennett and I are back and forth on swag. If you're going to AllCon, by the time Bennett makes it to AllCon, we'll have some swag to say thank you to our worldwide audience, because we're not going to be able to ship swag across the water. Really sorry. So if you want anime abandoned type swag, which I can guarantee you will exist by the time he goes to AllCon, you'd better make it to fucking AllCon. I don't want to see comments when we finally get the swag post up that's like, hi, I'm in Belfast, could I have some? No.
Fucking no.
Fucking no. Sorry. Like, the swag train is gonna take a plane, and then you're gonna make it to AllCon, or you don't get shit.
You know how much it costs to ship international?
Like $14. So
I know.
Because I tried it with the Toonami t-shirts, and I did all the research. I researched fucking hard on the Toonami t-shirts before I launched Hackhammer Press. And I felt so bad, but it's like, I can't ask people to do that, even if they're willing to do that. And more importantly, I can't be responsible if one of these shirts comes back and it's like, it was a small, I asked for a medium. God damn it. Because now that's $30 worth of shipping. Well, really, 45. That's, you know, just a back and forth, just to fix an order. So the plane and the brass tacks is that, sorry, worldwide audience, we can't ship you any swag that we make in the next couple of months. We're really sorry. But Bennett is going to AllCon, which means that take a train, take a bus, take a plane. I don't care. If you want anime abandoned swag, you go to AllCon. Everybody else who's state and Canada side,
even Mexico?
If you have fans in Mexico, I'd be real shocked.
Well, if I remember my numbers correctly, like, it goes from America to Canada to Great Britain to Germany, and then I think Mexico.
Okay. Hi, Mexican fans. But yeah, for U.S., Mexico, and Canada, we should be, like, can't, well, U.S. obviously, Canada is easy enough. Mexico, I just don't know. I want to say yes. We'll see how the numbers round up, but we will have swag in the next couple of months. We'll have a baseline of swag that we can just, you know, like, people who are donating large amounts, we can just, because we're holding on to names, we'll let you know, but there will be swag. Like,
I don't think we have anything any more to say, so I guess we should end it right here. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time here on Super Tool Shed.